Radio Prague News.
A bill aimed at increasing state support for the Czech film industry has been thrown out. Neither of the two main parties have a clear position on the possible building of a US anti-missile site in this country, Lidová Noviny reports, and a cinema in a small town in North Bohemia is refusing to screen The Da Vinci Code. A bill aimed at increasing state support for the Czech film industry has been thrown out. The Chamber of Deputies had previously approved it, but on Tuesday failed to overturn a veto by President Václav Klaus. Under the bill, cinemas, TV stations and video and DVD distributors would have had to contribute 3% of their sales to the State Cinematography Fund. The Czech Republic stand at the Cannes Film Festival closed on Wednesday in protest at the bill's failure. Neither the governing Social Democrats nor the opposition Civic Democrats have a clear position on the possible building of a United States anti-missile site in the Czech Republic, Lidová Noviny reported. Social Democrat Prime Minister Jiří Paroubek said he knew nothing about the project and would have to learn more about it. By contrast, Poland, the other candidate to host the site, has shown interest in further discussions with US officials. The New York Times wrote on Monday that Czech parties were trying to avoid debate on the issue because of the upcoming elections. A cinema in Jirkov, North Bohemia, is refusing to show the hit film The Da Vinci Code. Manager Miloš Kubelka told the newspaper Deníky Bohemia he was a Christian and said The Da Vinci Code undermined the values this country's democracy was founded on. Both the film and the novel it's based on have been slammed by Roman Catholic groups. Meanwhile, the director of the German film Goodbye Lenin says he does not understand why the right-wing Civic Democrats have used the movie in their election campaign. Wolfgang Becker told the Novinky website the party's PR people could only regard the comedy as a warning against the dangers of communism if they were in a coma when they watched it. And finally, the weather. It should be quite cloudy over the next few days, with rain in many parts of the country. Temperatures are expected to reach around 20 degrees Celsius. My name is Ian Willoughby. You'll find more stories on our website, but for now, that's the end of the news.
You're listening to Radio Prague. I'm Rob Cameron. Coming up in today's programme, a conference in Prague looks at Montenegro's chances of joining the EU, discussing Holocaust denial in the Czech Republic, and Czech football star Tomáš Rosický gets a dream transfer to the English club Arsenal. The Balkan state of Montenegro this week voted for independence from Serbia. Supporters of the break are optimistic that their new nation will eventually join other former communist states like the Czech Republic in the European Union. But just when and even if this will happen are still big questions. Questions debated at a conference on Tuesday in Prague. Brian Sabin was there.
Now is probably the wrong time for Montenegro or any other nation to join the long line waiting for EU membership. In 10 of the 15 old or pre-2004 members, a majority of people oppose expanding the union any farther. The 10 newer members, or EU10, which includes the Czech Republic, are more positive. 69% of people there are pro-enlargement. The Prague-based think tank Europeum held a discussion on the future of Montenegro and the Western Balkans in general this Tuesday. Director David Kral says that these are the most important prospective members for Czechs because of long-time ties with the southern Slavs.
The Czech Republic is acting as an EU member state. I think the main role is really to push for the Western Balkan case. There is not much appetite, I would say, you know, in the current European Union for enlargement in general. And I think the Czech position generally is that we have to, you know, give the Western Balkan countries a credible perspective of EU membership.
Mr. Kral says Montenegro and others need this goal to spur reform. However, with failed constitutional referendums in France and in the Netherlands, Some speculate that the EU is already overstretched and should not expand. Franz Lothar Altmann studies EU policy in Berlin, and he says that only the prospect of EU membership can stabilize Europe's most volatile corner. He adds that small Balkan countries might be more easily integrated than others.
The Western Balkan countries are, compared with the EU, only 4% of the population of the existing EU, which means it's really not much. It's another case, for example, with Turkey, or let's even take Ukraine. These are big countries, and there an overstretching of the EU is much more in discussion than with these small countries.
These states have already had some help. Austria has helped launch negotiations on Croatia's membership amid controversy, while Slovakia has offered frequent advice to Serbia. Mr. Kral expects the EU 10 to offer more assistance to Montenegro and its neighbors in the future.
And I think there is a sort of a regional alliance emerging between Czech Republic and some other countries in Central Europe, which are very strongly determined to push for the Western Balkan case.
Even with this backing, the Balkans still have a long road ahead, says Tia Mimicevic of the European Research Center in Sarajevo. She doesn't think this week's separation will help anyone's progress, and with the exception of Croatia, she doesn't expect any other former Yugoslav state to follow Slovenia into the EU anytime soon. The Western Balkans, she says, will have a longer path to membership than the Czech Republic and other former Soviet bloc countries did after they gained their independence.
It took 15 years for many of these countries to join the European Union, and concerning the state in which many of the Balkan countries are in now, I mean, Bosnia has a legacy of war, so basically we had to start in many ways from the zero compared to Czech Republic or Slovak Republic. So I think to this 15 years we can add another 10. Between 2015 and 2020 is a realistic.
And that was Tia Mimicevic of the European Research Center in Sarajevo, ending that report by Brian Sabin. The issue of Holocaust denial hit the headlines again recently due to the highly publicised trial of well-known Holocaust denier David Irving in Austria earlier this year. Here in Prague, this highly controversial topic was recently discussed at a public debate held at the Austrian Cultural Forum. Michael Longaro was there.
Holocaust deniers often describe themselves as historical revisionists who believe that the Holocaust did not occur as is represented in the conventional historical literature. In the Czech Republic, where upwards of 95% of the Roma and 86% of the Jews were killed, Holocaust denial is a crime that can land you in jail for up to 3 years. The debate on Holocaust denial was prompted by the recent publication of the Czech translation of Dr. Robert Jan van Pelt and Dr. Deborah Dvorak's seminal work, Auschwitz, 1270 to the present. Realizing that the arrival of such a book would initiate discussion, Agro Publishing House and Agora Central Europe, in conjunction with the newspapers Lidové Noviny and Respekt, organized the event. Public debates are not commonplace in Czech society. Therefore, the non-governmental organization Agora Central Europe put together debates in an effort to improve civic involvement. I spoke with their representative, Wojtek Ripka.
The rare thing about our debates, at least as I consider it, is that the people which are normally seen as audience are involved or are expected to express their opinion, not just to ask simple questions or just to listen to the panelists. I believe that we may raise some kind of attention to the public issues, not just for the audience to be passive consumers, but also to be involved, maybe even to feel that their views are listened to and considered as valuable.
A panel of experts, including Dr. Van Pelt, the director of the Jewish Museum, Leo Pavlat, the professor of international relations, Dr. Pavel Barsha, and assistant to the Constitutional Court, Petr Černý, answered questions from the audience on a variety of issues, including the plight of the Roma, which Mr. Van Pelt says was largely neglected in the Holocaust literature until a decade ago. Surveys by the American Jewish Committee indicate that Czechs are well aware that the Holocaust occurred, but are less sure of specifics, including the numbers of Jewish and Roma victims. I asked attendee Gwendolyn Albert, director of the League of Human Rights, to comment on whether all Czechs are knowledgeable about the Holocaust.
I don't think they are. I think people in Prague are, and the rest of the country not. I think that it's been very piecemeal, what's been taught about it here.
In connection with this issue, Dr. Van Pelt spoke of the importance of creating more professorships in Holocaust studies in order to increase awareness through improvement of Holocaust education. He also feels that public debates such as these are an important step in this process and called the debate a success.
I thought there was an incredible energy in the room, and I really admire everyone who showed up for the fact that they filled the room, that there was only standing place, and the way everyone participated. And I'm really impressed by the way people voted with their feet and chose to be here tonight.
Though the dialogue during the debate was unfocused, it nevertheless illustrated the importance of public discussion in the creation of a civil society in the Czech Republic.
It is official. Without doubt, the biggest Czech transfer this season. Borussia Dortmund midfielder Tomáš Rosický to Arsenal in the English Premiership. The transfer fee, not officially disclosed, has been put at £8 million, the equivalent of $15 million. Jan Wellinger has the details.
For Tomáš Rosický, one of the Czech Republic's most talented players, whose fortunes have somewhat suffered in the German league of late, joining Arsenal represents a major move up. A chance to play for one of the world's best teams on a 4-year contract. On Tuesday, Rosický welcomed the chance to play alongside world-class players like striker Thierry Henry, who he called the best in the world. He also made clear that he is aware of the pressure he will face. Having joined one of England's best clubs, he will still have to earn a permanent spot in the lineup.
Tak to je samozřejmě ten bod, který bude samozřejmě největší rozdíl, to je jasný, ale já jsem tohle chtěl, já jdu do top klubu, kde ta situace...
Of course, I'm aware of this point, and that will be the biggest difference. Now I've joined a top club. The situation is different, and there will be a lot of competition to make the roster. On the other hand, what better team than Arsenal to make me a better player?
Ta konkurence o místa, já se chci zlepšovat a kdo jiný by mě měl udělat lepšího než Arsenal.
Already, Rosický, a former Czech Player of the Year, is considered one of the Czech's most talented midfielders, a swift and guileful playmaker who can add spark at crucial moments that decide key matches. By turns, he has shined at Sparta Prague, at Borussia, and for the national squad, for which he has scored 15 goals in 53 caps. In the absence of Pavel Nedved during the World Cup qualifiers, he took on greater responsibility at the heart of the Czech midfield. But after 5 years at Borussia, a club strapped by financial difficulties, it was clear the player's career needed to change gears. Former Czech international Antonín Panenka.
Já si myslím, že hlavně pro něj je to velmi, velmi příznivá a dobrá zpráva.
It's very good news for the player, and he can breathe a sigh of relief knowing that his future is secure. Now he can concentrate fully on the World Cup. As far as the English league is concerned, I don't think Tomáš should have any trouble. He knows how to make himself essential and knows how to create situations. Of course, the English league is more aggressive than the Bundesliga, but I don't think it'll be a problem. I think he'll adapt.
And the Arsenal signing comes just 2 weeks ahead of the World Cup, the first four players like Rosický. He was only 9 years old the last time Czechs competed, way back in 1990. Along with Pavel Nedved, Karel Poborský and Petr Čech, the midfielder should be a major asset next month, and if things go the Czechs' way, Arsenal may be relieved that they acquired the player before and not after the tournament. If Rosický ends up shining there, his value can only increase.
And good luck to him. Jan Wellinger with that report. Coming up next, Chris Jarrett with a special program looking back at an extraordinary performance of Verdi's Requiem at Terezín concentration camp.
Late 1943, the cold barracks of the Terezín ghetto stand against an autumn sky. Although deportations to the camp had come to a standstill earlier in the year, the overcrowded conditions, disease and hunger still remained, as did the ever-present threat of the gas chambers. But on this occasion, the usual sounds carried through Terezín's bleak corridors were interrupted by very different strains. One Rafael Schachter, using just a legless piano and with one single copy of the score, gathered over 150 fellow prisoners in a basement beneath the camp to rehearse a performance of Giuseppe Verdi's Requiem. On Sunday, 63 years on, the camp was once again the venue for Verdi's masterpiece, performed by musicians from the Benjamin T. Rome School of Music, in remembrance of those who lived their last days in the grounds of Terezín. As part of the Prague Spring Music Festival, the performance incorporated dramatic on-stage reenactments and interviews with Terezín survivors, along with Verdi's moving score, to bring to life once again Schachter's great musical achievement. Murray Seedlin, the Dean of Music at the Catholic University of America, is the man responsible for Sunday's event.
For more than 3 years, Rafi Schachter inspired the Terezín population until his deportation to Auschwitz on October 16, 1944. From which he did not return. And now we honor his blessed memory by bringing back to Terezín his beloved Verdi score. For him, his many singers, and their prisoner audiences, this music was simply affirmation of their incalculable need and thirst and determination to go on. We know what Rafi did and what he meant. And now, in his name and memory, we shall sing!
Indeed, what Schachter accomplished in Terezín was a momentous feat. Not only did he have to deal with the looming threat of the gas chambers, but even within the Jewish community at the camp, there was unrest regarding Schachter's project. The Terezín Jewish Council, which monitored prisoners' activities in the camp, saw the piece, which took the form of a Christian mass, as an apology for being Jewish. They feared that it may anger the SS, limiting the prisoners' few remaining freedoms even further. After the concert, Seedlin described just how great the obstacles faced by Schachter's choir were.
Edgar Krause, who was in the front row today, said to me that they would work many, many hours a day as slave labor, and then they'd go down to the basement over near the museum, and they would rehearse at night, even though they were sick and they were hungry and all that. It was just a devotion and dedication. So I heard that, you know, these prisoners were preparing the Verdi Requiem, and they had to learn it by rote because there was no score, only one score. I thought this is a miraculous kind of event.
Seedlin has organized a number of similar events across the United States in the past few years to honor those who suffered in concentration camps across Europe, and not just in Terezín. The Defiant Requiem was first performed under Seedlin's direction in 2002 by the Oregon Symphony Orchestra, but this latest performance in the camp itself constitutes his culminating work about Schachter's musical struggle and achievements in Terezín. Seedlin explained why Schachter's story is so significant.
He was a hero because he shared his love for music for people who needed it at a time when they needed it very badly. This was a place that treated people in the worst possible way that mankind can invent. And his response to that was not to go down to their level, but to rise above and show the best of mankind. Respond to the worst of mankind with the best of mankind. So he takes great music, great art, and he tried to inspire all of his people to choose life, to be determined. So in that way, he was a hero because he himself was a victim, and yet he led others to the highest heights. I think he was a great hero, and it's my mission to make sure that everybody knows he's a hero.
Also present at the performance were a number of Terezín survivors, some of whom well remember the underground rehearsals and the painstaking task of learning Verdi's 90-minute-long piece by heart. One such survivor is Edgar Krasa, a cellmate of Rafael Schachter at Terezín, who has attended a number of Seedlin's commemorative performances in the United States. He talks about his memories of one of the camp's most famous musicians.
Schachter, his legacy is only in the memory of those who were singing with him or listening to him. And it's very interesting, it was very interesting then, that he taught the Czech Jews to Mozart's operas to uplift their spirits. That was his drive. I think 24 hours a day he helped people to forget the misery and either doing what was helping them or at least looking forward for the next time to do it. So it helped to give you strength to carry on.
In true keeping with the conditions afforded to Raphael Schachter in 1943, Sunday's performance took place in one of the old Storish buildings in the Terezin camp. Krasser explains why he believes this provided an appropriate setting for the performance of the Defiant Requiem.
The other performances that Sidlin made in Washington and in Portland, so was never in a concert hall. It was always in something like this, an expo hall, where the beams were exposed and the pipes, and the benches were even less comfortable than this to bring it close to the Terezin environment. And I think that helps to create the environment that under which it was performed originally.
Indeed, Schachter's endeavour proved key for many prisoners at Terezin and has been described by many as life-saving, providing at least a little alleviation of the harsh conditions at the camp. With the Latin text of the work speaking of God's liberation and justice, it allowed people to express through music what could never be discussed in words. Krasser recalls the significance of Schachter's music for those imprisoned in Terezin.
When we sang in the chorus, we felt defiant like him. And for us, this was also an act of defiance. And that helped too. You couldn't rise up and fight them, but in this way you could show your defiance. And today, it's the memory. We are free, but this, at the end, I was shaky.
Sidlin's production of the Defiant Requiem marked a milestone in the commemoration of the plight of the prisoners of Terezin and ensures that music made during the Holocaust period will be remembered for years to come.
I wanted to bring it home. In my own way, I wanted to tell the people who were underground here or those who died in Auschwitz but who came from here and those who still survive, I wanted to tell them that we heard them, that we understand what they did. And I want them to be aware that they may be gone or they may be old, but that somebody is going to, at least one small person in my own way, I'm going to take their message and I will continue to try to persuade people to know about Terezin, to know about Schachter, what a great hero he was, and the value and the message and the lessons that they were giving us, and to continue them.
Music from Verdi's Requiem, ending that special programme by Chris Jarrett here on Radio Prague. Don't forget, we always want to know what you think of our programmes. You can write to us. The address is Radio Prague, 12099 Prague, the Czech Republic, or, of course, send us an email, english@radio.cz. And if you like that programme, you can listen to it again on our internet site, www.radio.cz/English. I'm Rob Cameron. I do hope you've enjoyed today's programme and please do tune in again soon.